A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging arts organizations and institutions. We'll look at the impact of the economy, technology, and society on the arts, the importance of arts education, and how these organizations and ensembles are adjusting and innovating as they face the future. Today, we'll continue with our survey of what's in store for the 2018-2019 season around our region. The Philadelphia Orchestra and Carnegie Hall recently released details of their respective plans, and I'll speak with Jeremy Rothman, Vice President of Artistic Planning at the Philadelphia Orchestra, and Clive Gillinson, Executive and Artistic Director at Carnegie Hall. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. As it prepares to mark its 100th anniversary, the Los Angeles Philharmonic has announced a season-long celebration, including the premieres of more than 50 new works, collaborations with other performing arts organizations, including the American Ballet Theater, performances by its past music directors, and a major expansion of its YOLO Youth Music Education Program. Kickoff events will feature a multimedia display on the facade of Walt Disney Concert Hall drawn from archival images and audio from the Philharmonic's history and a day-long Celebrate LA Day, including a free Hollywood Bowl concert. The Philharmonic also has plans to tour on three continents during the spring of 2019, including stops in Seoul, Tokyo, London, Mexico City, and New York. In order to bring new listeners into the concert hall, the LA Phil will offer free tickets through a 100 for the 100 program. Among new commissions scheduled for performance during the season are works by Adolphus Hailstork, Bryce Dessner, Du Yun, Unsuk Chin, Julia Adolph, and Tan Dun. In addition, the Philharmonic will begin design work on a new permanent home for its youth orchestra program called YOLA that will make it possible for the program to double its reach to students by the year 2022. The center is being designed by Frank Gehry, who also designed the Philharmonic's home venue of Walt Disney Concert Hall. Philadelphia Orchestra Music Director Yannick Nézet-Séguin is among those who will be honored by the University of Pennsylvania during this year's commencement ceremony. Nézet-Séguin, who is also Music Director Designate of the Metropolitan Opera and Artistic Director and Principal Conductor of Orchestre Metropolitain de Montréal, will receive an Honorary Doctor of Music during the May event. Other honorees include author and commentator Peggy Noonan and NBC News Chief Foreign Affairs Correspondent Andrea Mitchell, who will be this year's commencement speaker. Santa Fe Opera has named Robert Mea as its general director, succeeding John Mackey at the end of the current season. Mea has been at Santa Fe Opera since 2012, when he became director of external affairs. He previously held positions with New York City Opera and the White Knights Foundation of America. Santa Fe Opera said in a statement that Mea will appoint Alexander Neef as the company's first artistic director and Harry Bickett, currently Santa Fe's chief conductor, as its music director. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. The American experience, including the diverse range of works and influence by American composers and musicians, are increasingly becoming a mainstay of orchestral and musical performances, and next year's seasons announced by the Philadelphia Orchestra and Carnegie Hall reflect that. We'll start with Philadelphia, which next year will feature another Philadelphia-focused work by artist-in-residence Hannibal Locumbe, as well as two new works by Nico Muhly. It will also wrap up its celebration of Leonard Bernstein's centenary. Overall, the season includes performances of Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto with soloist Lisa Patashvili, Rachmaninoff's Symphonic Dances and Symphony No. 1, Mahler's Symphony No. 9, Brahms' Symphony No. 1, and Ravel's Piano Concerto in G Major with pianist Carol Gerstein. Continuing a growing trend under music director Yannick Nézet-Séguin, a number of operatic works are included, some of which underscore the conductor's ties with the Metropolitan Opera, where he serves as music director designate and will step into the music director position in 2020. For example, the season will feature an orchestral suite from Mully's opera Marnie, which will debut at the Met next year, and the orchestra will welcome mezzo-soprano Joyce DiDonato for her subscription debut. Among new commissions, the orchestra will premiere the latest work by Hannibal, titled Healing Tones, which explores the many facets of the human experience, including peace, war, motherhood, suffering, and longing. The partnership with Hannibal, who draws from thoughts and ideas from interactions with Philadelphia residents and organizations, is just one aspect of the orchestra's HEAR initiative, short for Health, Education, Access, and Research, and is designed to create deeper roots within the city's community. In order to provide greater scheduling options for its community programs, the orchestra has extended its main season, lasting from September through June, rather than wrapping up in May. Among other season highlights include the conclusion of a multi-season salute to Leonard Bernstein, whose centenary is being celebrated this year, and a festival exploring the connections between Leopold Stokowski and Albert Barnes, whose eclectic art collection is held by the Barnes Foundation. For more insight on the season's highlights, I spoke with Jeremy Rothman, the orchestra's vice president of artistic planning.
We always create seasons that have a broad diversity of repertoire and experiences for the orchestra and for the audiences. We often have themes and anniversaries that we celebrate throughout the year or across multiple years. So this season has all of those things on offer. The repertoire spans from Baroque through Broadway. We have the culmination of our Bernstein centenary that's been across multiple seasons. We are celebrating the historic connection between Albert Barnes and Leopold Stokowski, two great artistic visionaries that were here in Philadelphia in the first part of the 20th century, bringing in great guest conductors and great guest soloists, and featuring the best of what Yannick has to offer with this orchestra. In addition to our subscription programming, we offer a wide variety of special concert programming, which ranges from our traditional holiday programs around Christmas, New Year's Eve. We're presenting a Bugs Bunny symphonic program. So many of us grew up with these cartoons, and we're drawn to symphonic music through the incredible scores from these Bugs Bunny Warner Brothers cartoons. So it's going to be great to hear those live with orchestra. Cirque performers with Circular Symphony. And we'll also, over the course of the year, continue to be celebrating the Fred J. Cooper Memorial Organ Experience with generous funding from the Wincote Foundation that incorporates two organ concertos, a brand new commission, a holiday brass and organ concert, an organ Halloween and symphony orchestra spectacular, and some other great organ work spread throughout the course of the season. So it's another way that we can incorporate the orchestra with that incredible instrument.
Well, looking first at some of the season particulars, you mentioned the wide range that the repertoire of the programs will cover. What type of balance are you seeking to strike between the old favorites and some of the newer works, such as the works you'll have by Hannibal and also Nico Muhly?
We hope that almost every program and every experience has that blend. And it's important to always honor the great tradition of this orchestra and the great traditions of the repertoire, but present them juxtaposed in new ways against either less familiar repertoire by well-known composers or some contemporary works, and looking to create works with a new context, a new framework around them. So when we commission Hannibal Lokumbe, it's part of our ongoing commitment to community commissions, works that specifically speak to the city of Philadelphia and people of all backgrounds, and connections to the orchestra, or a composer like Nico Muhly, who will present a couple of times, both in the context of Yannick's connection to the Metropolitan Opera, but also through his organ concerto, which helps us celebrate the incredible Fred J. Cooper Memorial Organ here in Verizon Hall. So anytime we're creating a new work, we also want to have different aspects and angles that people can approach this music as well.
Now, one thing that I did notice pointed out in a couple of articles is there is quite a good representation of new music, but what is not present in the season is female composers. Is that something that's taken into account, or what's the thought on that?
It is. Diversity of composers is something that is always an area that we do pay attention to, composers, performers on stage, and artists. It can sometimes be a little bit uneven from year to year. We have female conductors joining us on the podium. We have worked with Jennifer Higdon on many occasions, and we actually have a special project that has already been in the works for quite a while around the Beethoven centenary in 2020, which we're going to stay tuned for, which we think will shine a light as well on increasing, broadening the breadth of composers that we're able to present and commission.
Another thing that the season really underscores is the Philadelphia Orchestra's relatively new direct connection to the Met. Tell us about how that connection enabled you to bring a little more opera and some different highlights into the season, which certainly had been an increasing presence since Yannick had arrived at the orchestra.
Yeah, Yannick being a conductor with great versatility and having a great affinity for the voice, vocal repertoire, operatic repertoire, oratorios and cantatas, has definitely broadened our ability to explore this repertoire. And now with his dual role upcoming with the Metropolitan Opera and his music directorship here in Philadelphia, we are able to design some concepts in Congress with Metropolitan Opera planning. So whether that's presenting some orchestral selections of a new opera being premiered there, teaming up with the Lindemann Young Artist Program, bringing some soloists that often appear at the Met down to Philadelphia, those will be things that can be an ongoing part of our planning and our diet here in Philadelphia.
With regards to the community connections, certainly the work by Hannibal as you continue your collaboration with him is going to be a centerpiece. Tell us a little bit about how that work is coming along and what you expect for that performance.
These community commissions are really the nexus of our artistry and our commitment to being an orchestra and an art form for the entire city of Philadelphia. So all of the work that we do in our collaborative learning programs in schools, in community centers, in healthcare settings, this provides an avenue in our core subscription programming, our main stage concert programming, to feature all of that work. Hannibal, who is our composer in residence, this will be the third year and final year of his residency, has been immersed in Philadelphia and meeting people from throughout the city, collecting ideas, collecting texts, collecting musical inspiration, melodies, things that are important to the fabric of Philadelphia, the city's spirit and its dreams, all wrapped up into the works that Hannibal is able to create, these incredible oratorio pieces that tend to have a great deal of raw emotion to them, immediacy, and speak really to, I think, the human expression of the entire community of Philadelphia.
One aspect that speaks to that is that you have shifted your season a little bit in order to make more community-related performances and programs possible. Tell us a little bit about how that came about and what that means for the season.
In talking to our audiences and in talking to our community, we looked at ways that we could broaden the season, not just in the number of performances, but just in the span of time that we perform between September, starting a little earlier, and going into June, giving audiences more time to experience the orchestra rather than such a condensed period, which has typically more been sort of late September to early May. So giving a few more weeks on either end of the season to continue to be performing here in Philadelphia, with some breaks along the way over the course of the year that we can get out of the community and present some concentrated pockets of time that we can really be present for the city of Philadelphia.
Now you mentioned some important major names that are being celebrated. The first is you're wrapping up your marking of the centennial of Leonard Bernstein's birth. What has been the significance and what has been the focus of how Yannick has crafted the orchestra's tribute and remembrance of Bernstein and his legacy?
He's an artist, a composer of such diverse abilities and diverse styles that presenting, it really was kicked off by performances of his Mass, that incredible masterpiece that incorporates Broadway, rock and roll, R&B, classical, 12-tone, such a diversity of styles and performers that were on stage for that. We had community dancers, we had community choirs, marching bands, mummers. So that piece was a real launching point to show the way that Leonard Bernstein was able to incorporate so many different kinds of styles. He's such an omnivore when it came to different genres of music. That's been very much part of the work that we've done in celebrating his centenary, presenting West Side Story and presenting Candide next year, but also presenting his three symphonies, presenting a work like Prelude, Fugue, and Riffs that was written for Benny Goodman. So, whether it's jazz, Broadway, symphonic, Chichester Psalms with a choral work. We've been trying to touch all corners of the musical styles of Leonard Bernstein and using that as a way to inform we program the rest of our concerts, that we can really broaden the field of music that this orchestra is able to present and really should be part of the symphonic genre.
You spoke about diversity in style, and I think that's actually a very good way to describe what you would find in the Barnes Museum. And you'll be celebrating the connection between Barnes and Stokowski in a festival next season. What will that entail?
We've been looking at the correspondence back and forth between Leopold Stokowski and Albert Barnes. Both of these gentlemen were importing great European art, very contemporary European art, to Philadelphia directly. In the 1930s, both had a great interest in making art available to the general public. They were populists in that sense, somewhat anti-establishment. And Stokowski spoke at the opening of the Barnes collection. The two of them had a somewhat confrontational exchange of letters, as I think was often the case of Albert Barnes, and challenging people in their way that they looked at art and looked at his collection. But we're going to be looking at the kind of music that Albert Barnes felt was most directly connected to his paintings and to his collection, and also looking at Leopold Stokowski and the works that he brought directly to Philadelphia and the way that he got people listening differently to symphonic music.
This will be the second or third season with the symphonic choir, and I was wondering how that's been shaping up since you first launched that.
We've been really pleased with the artistry that Joe Miller has been able to bring to the preparation of that chorus, and our ability to attract some really great talented vocalists here in Philadelphia, in the Philadelphia region. Joe Miller and Yannick Nézet-Séguin have been working very carefully on shaping the sound, the color, the musicianship of that particular ensemble. And we look forward to seeing that particular ensemble mature and grow and be a great fit for the Philadelphia Orchestra sound for years to come. In addition to how we utilize the Westminster Symphonic Choir, in addition to how we utilize the Mendelssohn Club around the holidays, in addition to how we utilize community choirs for things like Todd Macover's piece this year or the Hannibal coming up next season, these are all important ways that we bring in a great diversity of vocal voices, of vocal ensembles into the Philadelphia Orchestra performances.
That was Jeremy Rothman, Vice President of Artistic Planning of the Philadelphia Orchestra. Full details on the orchestra season can be found at philorc.org. At Carnegie Hall, the focus of its annual festival will be on some of the various migration waves that brought diverse groups of peoples and their musical traditions to and across the United States, and how that has shaped our musical heritage. Curated in part by mandolin virtuoso, vocalist, and composer Chris Thiele, holder of next year's Debs Composer's Chair, the festival will highlight the contributions of the Scots-Irish during the early years of American settlement, Jewish immigrants from Eastern Europe at the turn of the 20th century, and the great migration of African Americans from the South to the North during the early and mid-20th century. Next year's Perspective Series will feature conductor Michael Tilson Thomas and pianist Yuja Wang. Carnegie Hall will also continue its commitment to new music as it moves into the fourth year of its 125 Commissions project, presenting works by contemporary composers including Steve Reich, John Adams, Bryce Dessner, Sofia Gubaidulina, and Nico Muley. At Carnegie Hall's Weill Music Institute, Renee Fleming will launch the Song Studio, a program based on an earlier initiative of Marilyn Horne to support young singers. The Institute will also release an album on the Decca label of works composed by families participating in its Lullaby Project. This summer, the Institute will debut the latest addition to its National Youth Orchestra of the USA initiative, this one open to young jazz musicians and led by trumpeter Sean Jones. This year's National Youth Orchestra will tour Asia, and NYO2, for younger orchestral musicians, will partner with the New World Symphony in Miami for a six-day residency. Clive Gillinson is executive and artistic director at Carnegie Hall, and I spoke with him about how next year's migration theme reflects issues that are timely and relevant.
Well, I think they are. I mean, if one thinks about our 60s festival, I mean, the reason why Bob Caro felt that was the subject he wanted to address and why we were so excited about it is because, you know, I think everybody felt in the 60s with the civil rights legislation, all the legislation that went through, I think there was a sense society was beginning to solve its problems, and a lot of the big issues that had, you know, tortured America in many ways, America tortured itself in many ways, were things that would now be solved. Now the reality is, well, firstly, problems are never totally solved. I mean, that never happens. But secondly, a lot of those issues still lie at the core of, you know, some of the biggest challenges America faces in terms of, you know, how it really integrates as a nation, how it makes everybody feel they're part of the nation. And it's not just about race or ethnicity. I mean, it's much broader than that. So, you know, Bob felt that was a really important thing to address, that it was actually just as important in today's world as it was in the 60s. And we felt the same. So, but we feel with all the topics we address, we always want to look at things that are of great social importance and, you know, that matter about the society we live in. And, you know, that the arts really has to stimulate discussion. I mean, we're not trying to lead anybody, we're not ever trying to read lessons. We're never trying to tell people this is what you should do or not do. We feel we're there to ask questions and just really, you know, stimulate discussion and make sure people talk about the things that we think matter.
So, against that background then, what were some of the motivating factors for choosing and planning this theme of migrations for next year's?
Well, I mean, again, I think if you look at what is extraordinary about America, what is extraordinary about America is the unbelievable breadth of people who've come here to make it their home, who wanted to be American, who came often, you know, I mean, whether it's from outside or, you know, the migrations internally, you know, who came from the most unbelievably awful circumstances in many cases. And America was the place where they found a home and where they could actually, you know, where they could be and where they were safe. And so, and where also they brought so much with them about their own cultures. I mean, this is one of the things I find utterly fascinating, you know, which came up with Chris Thiele, it came up, you know, more broadly, you know, is that people came here with all their different cultures. I mean, you know, if you just think of the Russian Jewish ones. I mean, you know, so much of this culture, of the shtetls in Russia, and you know, or Poland or whatever it is, nothing to do with America, and yet came here, integrated, became part of America, and is actually now a central part of American culture. You know, so this is what's amazing about America. I mean, it's just been this incredible absorption of all these cultures, but they all become American. And so everybody's contributing. I mean, America is saving so many people and creating lives for them, but equally they're all contributing back in such huge ways. You know, so it's, I mean, it's a real, you know, everybody helping each other.
Well, given that broad tapestry, how did you settle on those three particular migrations? What do they reflect about American life and, most clearly, American musical life?
Well, I mean, we wanted to look at three. Yeah, we thought it would be right to do three. We couldn't do more. And our partners could, you know, explore lots of other things. I mean, one of the things we're finding fascinating is there are so many partners who are saying, but we want to show what the contribution is that the Japanese have made to America. Or the Chinese, or the South Americans, or the, you know, it's huge. So it's stimulating, you know, fantastic responses all around. That's number one. Number two, you know, we just wanted to look at things that have had a huge impact on music. And so, I mean, we looked at lots of ideas, and we wanted things that were all very different too, that were all contrasting. You know, so hence the Irish Scots, you know, the Jewish Russian, and, you know, they were also very different time periods too. So it meant we'd actually spanned quite a broad time period. We'd spanned three very different cultural backgrounds, you know, which were very contrasting. Although, as Chris Thiele said, you then get all sorts of intermixing once everybody comes here. You know, so but they were all very different. You know, all people who came here, you know, or moved within America for reasons of duress and, you know, and, you know, largely the most terrible circumstances. And, you know, America became their home, and they became Americans and contributed immeasurably to America.
Well, in a nutshell, how would you summarize the way that those three groups did impact the American musical landscape? And whether, well, in terms of what you'll be featuring during the festival?
Well, certainly, I mean, you know, with the Scots-Irish, I mean, you know, we're looking at all sorts of things, including old music, bluegrass, you know, lots of other areas of folk music. I mean, with the Jewish, Russian, I mean, a lot of it is about the, you know, the Great American Songbook. It's about Broadway. It's about, it's also about Hollywood. And then with the Great Migration, a lot of it is, you know, it's Harlem jazz. It's, you know, it's so many other dimensions of popular culture in that way. So, I mean, so every one of them has had a huge impact on America and what we all think of as American culture.
What do you see Chris bringing to this?
You know, what's interesting is, I mean, as you heard, I mean, you know, firstly, he's a great collaborator. Secondly, he genuinely believes in in everything seeding everything else. So, I mean, I think, you know, he'll be a... I mean, he's a fantastic advocate, obviously, for the whole Scots-Irish side of this discussion. But he's also a huge fan of the Great American Songbook, of jazz, and so on. So, I mean, you know, his world... He doesn't see borders between worlds, which is what I love. So he sees all these artistic worlds interfacing. And, what you know, the word he was using, and both our perspectives artists were using, collaboration, you know, lies both at the centre of how all of them think as artists, but it's also how we think as an institution, because the fact is, you know, when I first came here and suggested this idea of doing festivals and working with other organisations in that way so that we'd all do something that was more than the sum of the parts, everybody's initial reaction was, don't bother, because New York organisations don't work together. They're all chasing the same money, so it's too competitive. They won't work with you. So I thought I'd just go, as I'm a foreigner, I thought, you know, I can be stupid once. So I went round and asked. Everybody said, fantastic, we'd love to work with you. And now, I mean, the interesting thing was I had several of our partners coming up to me just now and saying they love the fact that at Carnegie Hall, you know, really brings everybody together for these discussions so that we're all exploring things which none of us could do on our own. So, which is exactly what Chris's view is in terms of what he does, but it's also what we do institutionally. You know, about trying to make sure that all of us are telling stories that nobody could do on their own.
So what are you hoping that the audiences who attend this wide range of programming will walk away with? What are some of the things you want to be moving around in their minds and their emotions as they leave?
Well, I think firstly that the differences of America are actually our greatest strength. You know, for people to realise that actually, you know, all these different ideas, these different cultures, these different ethnicities, all of this is actually the strength of America, and it's why America is so extraordinary. I mean, I think that's one thing. The other thing, I think, is with all festivals, what I hope is they're always the beginning of a journey, not the end of a journey. I mean, I'd like to think that people go away and they want to learn more about the Great Migration, about the Russian Jewish, about the Scots-Irish. I mean, that they end up wanting, you know, because after all, it's not just about arts and culture. You know, Andrew Carnegie. You know, I mean, he built this place, but I mean, you know, a lot of what he did was not about arts and culture. But it was, I mean, certainly it was libraries, it was, you know, there were so many other things, but he built the Greater Still Empire. I mean, you know, so they contributed in loads of different ways beyond arts and culture. So I think to know and understand the contribution in lots of other ways of all those different groups who came here is also important. But we can't explore all of that.
That was Clive Gillinson, Executive and Artistic Director at Carnegie Hall. More information can be found at carnegiehall.org. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you, focusing on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world each week on A Tempo. Remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. You can listen to past programs of A Tempo by going to our arts and cultural news page at wwfm.org or searching for A Tempo on our program page. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.